From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly program on New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. There's been a virtual agreement on how to close the projected budget deficit, but it's not over yet. A Democratic vice presidential candidate has been picked. We'll have some reaction from state Democrats to that move, and hospital waste is washed up on state beaches and officials want to know where it came from. These stories and much, much, much more on this week's Legislative Gazette. Top aides to the leaders of the state legislature this week announced a virtual agreement on a plan that would close the projected $900 million budget deficit. But it's still not over, Bruce Robertson reports.
No definite agreements have been reached on a multitude of non-fiscal issues that need to be resolved before the legislature can go home for the summer. Included in those is a proposal to increase penalties for crimes committed out of racism or prejudice. An agreement did appear to be reached this week on a plan to ensure minority and women-owned firms a chance to win their fair share of public works contracts. That's been one of the most troublesome issues of the 1988 session. We talked to Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen, who gives us this overview of the late session work.
We're coming very close to agreement on all the essential issues, but it's an extraordinary, shadowy process, and to some degree, I think the entire session of the legislature has been. Whenever we decide, that is, all the leaders decide we're going to finish up, we're going to finish up. And I just don't know when that is. I presume that there would be some substantial printing problems and that kind of thing, technical problems. But if we decided this morning that we're going to finish this week, by Saturday or Sunday, we might be able to be finished. My guess is that the odds against that are extraordinarily long, and the more likely possibility is that we'll come back after the week after the Democratic Convention and finish up just before the 1st of August. But I think we are close. There isn't really agreement on the Shoreham issue, which we think is essential. There isn't an agreement yet on a civil rights bill that we think is essential. The others are close enough to close, but are not closed. Until everybody says we're going and we're moving towards winding this session up, I don't know whether they will be or not.
Though there is a lot of work yet to be done, lawmakers did agree to the following as a way to close an estimated $900 million deficit. A loan of about $600 million from a special fund created with a 1986 tax surplus. A $4 million cut in legislative pork barrel spending and another $16 million in similar cuts by Cuomo. Using $40 to $70 million from New York's public authorities and a 1.5% cut in the budgets of the legislature, Cuomo's executive chamber, and the judiciary. The tentative agreement also calls for some revenue raisers, including New York's participation in a huge multi-state lottery. The deficit reduction packages include no new taxes. As part of the tentative deal, top staffs to the legislature and Cuomo agreed to a program to help local school districts pay for a federally mandated program to inspect buildings for asbestos. Cuomo's fiscal aides predicted New York will have a deficit at year's end because of changes in the federal tax code. Reporting for the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis has made his choice for a running mate in this year's presidential race, Texas Senator Lloyd Benson. We talked with some New York State Democrats about that decision. First, here's Governor Cuomo.
Lloyd Benson is not a mistake. Lloyd Benson helps win Texas. Lloyd Benson is a formidable senator who offers Dukakis strength in Washington, one does not develop the same way as a governor as one develops as a senator, and a very strong voice on the economy, which will be Dukakis's biggest problem.
Governor Cuomo, Charles Rangel, the prominent black congressman from New York City, who says Jesse Jackson deserved more consideration.
I have no idea as to the thinking of Dukakis. He certainly didn't receive as much consideration as one would think that he deserved after Dukakis made a decision as to who that candidate would be. But I don't think that consideration for vice president deters at all our mission to get to the floor and to get our vote. We are entitled to a vote, and we will have that vote.
Charles Rangel. Finally, here are the thoughts of Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen.
I think it is a good decision because Democrats have to take southern states in order to have a chance of winning. Texas is very important, and I don't think Dukakis should concede Texas to Bush. Bush claims to be from Texas, but he really seems much more a New Englander, and I think we've got a good chance of taking Texas this year. Also, looking to the broader question, I believe Lloyd Bentsen will be a good partner for Michael Dukakis in the governance of the country. He's got excellent credentials on foreign policy and international trade and other areas where Dukakis' experience is somewhat limited. And he's really a very respected senator. He has an excellent reputation in Washington, and I think it's a very strong choice.
Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen. Reporter Don Decker reports that hospital waste washing up on Long Island beaches has become a concern of state politicians and other officials.
It started happening recently. Vials with blood remnants, surgical tubing, syringes, and other infectious waste showing up on the shores of Long Island and New Jersey. Beaches were closed. Investigators began their search for the culprit or culprits. Responding to the incident, Governor Cuomo said he'll ask the New York State Legislature to approve $2 million in new spending to give the state more power to crack down on illegal dumpers. Under the governor's plan, reckless and intentional dumping of infectious waste would be punishable by up to 10 years in prison and a $100,000 fine. Meanwhile, shocking information from the state health department. Health Commissioner David Axelrod told reporters one of the vials that washed ashore on Long Island is contaminated with the AIDS virus. He says the sample, which was discovered on Lido Beach in Nassau County, also tested positive for hepatitis.
Of the three samples of blood that we had, were given to us and which were tested, one of them was unequivocally positive for the presence of antibody to the HIV virus. When I say unequivocally, that means that the two tests, the initial test, which is a screening test, as well as the second test, which is a confirmatory test, were both positive. That same sample was also positive for hepatitis B virus. The combination of hepatitis B virus as well as the presence of the antibody to the AIDS virus would suggest that the individual from whom that blood came was an individual who had some intravenous injections or had transfusions of various sorts that would have been responsible for the concomitant presence of the two viral antibodies.
Dr. Axelrod says another vial found on a beach at the Robert Moses State Park in Suffolk County contained blood that tested both positive and negative in the two tests routinely conducted for presence of the deadly disease. A third vial tested negative. Axelrod says the health department is continuing to receive and test other vials found on the beaches. However, he stresses the results, at least at this point, do not indicate a major health problem.
While these results obviously confirm some of our fears with respect to the nature of the contamination of the samples, they in no way change our position with respect to the fact that in any event, the presence of these samples do not represent a significant public health hazard. The inactivation, that is the destruction of the virus, of the HIV virus, occurs at a fairly rapid rate, and the likelihood that live virus would have continued to be present in those vials over the course of time and a dose sufficient to produce infection is very, very small. And while the chances are very remote, I cannot say that the potential is absolutely zero. There's no such thing in science as absolute zero. There is always the potential. There is always that remote possibility. but we do not think that the presence of these vials of blood represent a significant public health hazard. Additionally, should blood have spilled onto the beach, the likelihood that there would be live virus present on the sand is effectively next to zero.
Dr. Axelrod says the State Department of Environmental Conservation is vigorously investigating where the waste is coming from. However, he says the vials were not marked, therefore are difficult to track. And while he says it's still too early to draw any conclusions about the source of the waste, he does have some ideas.
Well, they could have come from a doctor's office, they could have come from a laboratory, they could have come from a hospital, they could have come from any entity that had blood-drawing capabilities. These are clearly would be unusual to have these kinds of tubes, bottles, as simply being drug paraphernalia. They are not drug paraphernalia. They are clearly associated with the medical establishment in some form or shape.
New York State Health Commissioner Dr. David Axelrod. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Don Decker.
As state legislators get ready to wrap up the current session, Paul Rosenthal reports on the numerous bills being brought up with this week's Legislative Notebook.
New York will run out of landfill capacity in 8 years if current garbage production rates continue. The Legislative Commission on Solid Waste Management says New Yorkers are producing 20.16 million tons of garbage a year. The commission said the volume of garbage has increased by 14% since 1986. Meanwhile, the state is losing landfills. It has lost 50 over the last 2 years. The Legislative Commission estimated that at current garbage production rates, New York will run out of landfill capacity in 8.2 years, or sometime in 1996. It appears that the likelihood of a statewide law banning smoking in many public places has gone up in a puff of partisan smoke. The bill's chief Democratic sponsor accused the Republican-run state Senate of caving into pressure from the tobacco industry. The legislation would restrict smoking in restaurants, workplaces, and many other public places. But the bill, unanimously endorsed by the state Senate, would preempt any local no-smoking ordinance that is stronger than a state law. The bill, pushed by the Democratic-controlled state assembly, would require a minimum standard but would allow local laws to be more stringent. State Assemblyman Alexander Granis has sponsored no-smoking legislation for years. The Manhattan Democrat said the local governments that had adopted smoking regulations had asked the legislature to allow their laws to stand. He said that the Senate GOP had given in to the tobacco industry, which opposes smoking prohibitions. Businesses operated by minorities or women could be getting more work thanks to an agreement worked out in the state legislature. Legislative leaders came to terms on a bill that would prod businesses seeking state contracts into offering more work to minority-run companies. The proposed legislation is pushed by Assembly Democrats and would affect only contracts signed by state agencies. The bill would not apply to contracts between private firms or those entered into by local governments. Assembly Democrats initially wanted to include all local government contracts and private contracts where state funding was involved, but Republican opponents to the measure had argued that government should not be involved in dictating the composition of contracts. Senate Majority Leader Warren Anderson said there were enough votes to pass the bill in his Republican-controlled House before the end of the legislative session. The agreement stipulates that businesses owned by minorities or women be required to register with the newly created State Office of Minority and Women Business Development. The Senate has passed a bill that could send doctors in three downstate New York counties leaping through their files. The bill would give the state health commissioner the power to order all physicians in Westchester, Nassau, and Suffolk counties to review their records for instances where they diagnosed patients as suffering from juvenile rheumatoid arthritis since January 1975. The measure is designed to give health officials a better idea of how extensive the Lyme disease problem is in parts of the state. Health officials suspect that many conditions diagnosed as juvenile rheumatoid arthritis were in fact instances of Lyme disease, a neurological disorder that's carried by ticks. The Senate has approved legislation requiring that all new cars, starting with 1989 models, be equipped with tamper-resistant odometers. Sponsors of the measure say those odometers must indicate whether the vehicles have accumulated more than 100,000 miles. The bill is designed to deter people who tamper with odometers and improperly reduce the mileage of vehicles to increase a car's value. The Senate has approved a bill that would prohibit people convicted of vehicular manslaughter from qualifying for the state's new shock incarceration camps. Those boot camp-style facilities are designed to give young offenders a taste of military-type discipline and dissuade them from lives of crime. Senator Guy Vilela of the Bronx says people convicted of negligent homicide are not allowed to take part in the program. He says the same should be true of those convicted of killing someone with a motor vehicle. The bill now moves to the Assembly. Governor Cuomo signed legislation that will allow nurse practitioners to diagnose illnesses and prescribe drugs, a first for New York State. Elaine Gelman, a nurse practitioner and head of the state coalition of nurse practitioners, says now she will be able to do what she's been able to do all along without fear of someone looking over her shoulder.
Nurse practitioners, by virtue of functioning as nurse practitioners, make diagnoses that are medical diagnoses. The Nurse Practice Act, as written, says that we cannot make medical diagnoses. So that every time we do that, every time I look at a child and say he has otitis media, I consider that I am acting outside the scope of my nursing practice, but not outside the scope of my education and training.
The legislation takes effect April 1st, and it's been sought for several years now by the specially trained nurses. Proponents say it will help draw more people into the profession by giving more responsibility to nurse practitioners. The bill's Senate sponsor, Senator Tarki Lombardi of Syracuse, says it will increase health care alternatives in parts of the state that need them.
The bill really helps the public to have primary care supplied in their neighborhoods, in their communities, where perhaps there are no primary care physicians. For example, high-rise apartment houses in the urban settings or rural areas where you have low density numbers of doctors, but yet people need primary care. We found that through using physician associates, for example, we've been able to do outreach and provide primary care with the benefit of a doctor's talents and expertise available through the allied health professional. And we've done it with so-called physician associates. We now want to continue that practice with nurse practitioners.
Opposition to the bill came from the state's Doctors and Nurses Association. The state's Nurses Association lobbied against the bill, saying it required nurse practitioners to be affiliated with a doctor, thereby taking away a nurse practitioner's freedom. There are approximately 4,000 nurse practitioners in New York. In several other states, the nurses have already been granted the authority to make diagnoses and prescribe. The Senate gave final legislative approval to a bill that would establish money laundering as a crime under New York State statutes. The bill establishes 4 degrees of money laundering, from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony. The degree of the offense depends on how much money is involved in the transaction and what the intent of the offender is. In addition to prison terms, the measure also invokes a special provision that allows offenders to be fined up to $500,000, or 5 times the value of the property involved in the transaction. The legislation was originally proposed by Governor Cuomo in 1987. A bill prohibiting New York State employers from conducting random drug tests has been approved by the State Assembly. The bill says employers can only administer a drug test when there is a reasonable suspicion that a worker is abusing drugs or alcohol. The legislation also limits the use of drug testing of job applicants to cases where a job involves the direct safety of the public or other employees. And the Public Employees Federation Executive Board voted overwhelmingly to send a proposed 3-year contract to their 57,000 members for ratification next month. Here is Ron Kermani, spokesman for PEF.
The proposed contract would give our 57,000 members across New York State a 15.5% pay increase over the next 3 years. PEF is very satisfied with the tentative agreement. PEF members will make some unprecedented gains in the next 3 years in areas such as overtime and on-call eligibility. We've also gotten our foot in the door on several other major workplace issues, such as asbestos awareness and stress in the workplace.
Rank and file should get a copy of the proposed contract and a ballot by August 1st. PEF members have been working without a contract with the state since March 31st. That's this week's Legislative Notebook. I'm Paul Rosenthal.
We'd like to update you on another story. New York's Commissioner of Motor Vehicles may be considering dropping a plan to impose penalty points on the licenses of drivers caught breaking the state's mandatory seatbelt law. Assemblyman Gary Proud says he's received a letter from Motor Vehicles Commissioner Patiducci in which she says that the department may not go through with plans to impose penalty point violations for seatbelt violators. New Zealand's children are the most literate in the world, and 37 teachers and principals from New York have left to spend time on the country's North Island to observe why. The technique used in New Zealand is called the whole language approach, and New York State is at the forefront of the rising popularity of that concept here in the United States. Beth Engler reports.
Many children now learn to read before they even attend school, and Dr. Bruce Crowder, who is responsible for school improvement in New York State, says they usually learn in an effective way.
Not much of what we see in whole language is predicated on the bedtime story. Very simple. Interaction between a parent and child, the high degree of questioning and thinking that goes on in that interaction.
It's when children get to school that reading teaching methods dramatically change. For years now, many schools, including New York State systems, have used the basal or structured approach to reading. Children learn to read and write by learning sounds, word fragments, and vocabulary. Crowder says that's all fine, but such an approach can take the meaning out of reading. He says children who come from more advantaged reading families can usually weed through a basal approach and relate it to the reading they've already done and the stories they've already heard, but children from less advantaged homes can get lost, resulting in a high illiteracy rate.
In the case of whole language, the focus is to work from a literature base, to actually work with books, and to build off the language that the youngsters bring to school with them, and to help open a window in the child's mind to find out where that child is related to language and learning. And to give that youngster strategies as the child needs the strategies. A key factor within whole language development is not to do anything for the child that the child can do for himself. But the teacher has to know when to intervene and how to intervene. But the key is to focus on situations, literacy experiences, that are meaningful. And they're based upon incidents, topics, stories that youngsters can understand and will appreciate. By the way, an assessment that was done on basals by the National Council of Teachers in the English just talked about the pitiful state of the quality of the literature in many of those basal programs. So what you're looking at, the difference is to move away from a fragmented skill development looking primarily at phonology and structure to a program that begins to focus from the semantic approach, meaning. But whole language, as the youngster progresses through the use of stories and their own writing, the teachers do deal with the phonology, the sounds that in word making. They also deal with the structure of the language. I talked about youngsters at the kindergarten level maintaining journals and writing their own books and publishing. But the youngsters begin to draw very heavily on the phonology and the structure as they develop themselves as authors. I mean, that is pretty much the difference. And to go into a classroom and watch a teacher working in this is just incredible, because the level of activity and the excitement of the youngsters is really tremendous. Most of our kids in traditional programs have very little experience in writing. In fact, if you look at many elementary classrooms today, the traditional type being run by a very strong basal program, you're going to find very, very little writing, if any at all. And much of it will be done in a very mechanical way.
So instead of learning how to read a book, the children are actually reading books.
That's correct. You know, it's so damn commonsensical that you almost feel embarrassed trying to defend it. You know what I mean? It is just such a practical way to begin. I mean, if you go back to the old McGuffey reader and you look at some of the rich stories and things that they had in those, and my God, and they actually dealt with that. People worked out of that. You know, I guess I'd be forced to say that so much of what we know about whole language or integrated language arts is not new. Good teachers have done it. I'm amazed at the number of teachers that we've had come to our conference. This past year, we ran 5 conferences in whole language. I think we worked with, I believe, over 4,000 teachers came to those conferences, and we ended up turning back about over 2,000.
Dr. Crowder says he would like to see the legislature get involved in the whole language approach. And where do state politics fit into new approaches in education? Senator James Donovan, who heads the Senate's Education Committee, says it's their constitutional duty to provide educational opportunities. He says that New York is in the forefront of education, and he says the New Zealand trip typifies the state's commitment.
I think we have one of the best systems, not only in this country, but in many other parts of the world. I'm a member of the Education Commission of the States and a member, vice chairman of the National Conference of State Legislatures as it relates to the Education Committee in that national organization. In all the meetings I participate in, I find that New York is generally 10 years ahead of any other state in the union, maybe with the exception of California, in terms of educational innovation and educational programming. I know in New York we provide more opportunities and greater investments in the area of electronic learning than probably any other state. New York has problems unique to this state because we are a state to where people from all over the world settle. We're a state where people from other parts of the country come and settle because they think there's greater opportunities and there's more social consciousness here than there might be in some other state. I can recall the many visits I make to the New York City school system, where it isn't uncommon to have a classroom where the maybe 26 different languages are spoken. Now, you don't find that condition in say, in Colorado or Utah.
State Senator James Donovan. Dr. Crowder sums up just how important the whole language approach could be, with reading and writing as the cornerstone of education.
When you think about, you know, when you think about the notion that we ought to have a goal in the society which says that every child will be literate by the time that youngster completes the primary grades, I mean, what a goal. And that this program has that potential.
Dr. Bruce Crowder, an assistant commissioner with the State Education Department. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Beth Angler.
And that's it for this week's Legislative Gazette. The show was produced by Beth Engler. She had help this week from Paul Rosenthal, Bruce Robertson, Dave Galletly, Don Decker, and Inga Sarda. We hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll tune in again next week to hear what's happening in and around the Empire State. Until then, I'm Alan Chartock.
Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Public Radio in Albany. Dr. Alan Chartock is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the Legislative Gazette, a weekly newspaper on state politics with student internships available.